episode 9 of the Adversity series of this podcast. Join us in brewing strength and extracting lessons from every situation. Let's face the bitterness, savor the sweetness, and let reasoned conversations be the catalyst for growth. Together, we'll take on life one cup at a time. I'm your host, Nurse Douglas Atkinson, and with me is your co-host, Takis Nelson. As we embark on this caffeinated journey of dialogue and discovery, let's center ourselves with our podcast mantra, brewing resilience and sipping strength, one cup at a time. Today, we have the beautiful Zara Marie Mohan Singh. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, you're correct. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Zara is a child of God, and many of us know her as a content creator, attorney at law, and an entrepreneur. During her off time, you can find her on an adventure somewhere acting silly, but the mountains have her heart. Those of us who are a Dear Church Girl fan or an XYZ fan, we know that she is passionate about living an authentic Christian life, as well as her business and content creation. She co-hosts a YouTube community with her husband, Zondre. There, they share their faith through creating Christian content to inspire and edify young Christians worldwide. 1 Corinthians 10 verse 31 is her guiding verse. Whether we eat or drink, it should all be done to the glory and honor of God. Today, Mrs. Mohan Singh will be sharing with us how she navigated the death of her father as she transitioned into high school, as well as her financial struggles as she went through law school. Once more, hi, Zara.
Hi.
Great to have you.
It is such a pleasure to be here, ladies. Thanks for the invite, and I'm looking forward to this conversation.
It's great to have you just the same. So not many of us would have experienced what you had gone through as a child. You know, We may have been grown in a single-parent household from when we were very young, or we have both of our parents throughout adulthood. But you lost your father very young. How did that impact you initially?
Well, I mean, so backtrack a little bit. When my dad died, I was living in a single-parent home at the time. So my mom and my dad, they had separated at that point, and he wasn't living with me. So even though he wasn't living with me, we still had a good relationship. And, you know, there was like an evolution where he was trying to be a better father, be more present, because he had recently like returned to Jamaica from migrating. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was just as young as maybe somebody who is listening to this. I was 12 and I had just finished GSAT. It was at that time. Now I know it is PEP. Yes. I don't know where the time went, but during that time, I was on a pinnacle because I was doing really well and I had like a scholarship from GSAT. And then my dad died because of gun violence. And I think it was at a very foundational stage in my journey where I was supposed to be going into this new phase. High school was this new opportunity. And I think it affected me in ways that aren't particularly uncommon. So it affected my self-esteem, my self-worth, because now I didn't have a dad. So that manly figure, I yearned for that older attention, that manly attention. So that was one of the biggest ones. And then also just that deep sense of grief and loss, it affects a child in many ways, you know. So with the call them daddy issues, I had the daddy issues when it came with trying to figure out who I was getting attention from, not feeling enough wanted this male validation because I didn't have it around me. And then of course, dealing with that sadness, doing schoolwork with that sadness, showing up like I'm okay with that sadness and trying to navigate this high school journey with very limited bandwidth, but wanting to be okay because I didn't want anybody to ask me if I was fine. I didn't want the attention. I didn't want to be the girl with the dead dad, you know? So I think those are some of the major ways that I saw impacts for me.
So you mentioned that you didn't live with your father, but it sounds like you had a very close relationship with him.
Yeah, we were good. We were actually getting closer at the time. And that's kind of what makes the story even more sad, because during those moments, as I said, he was living in Cayman and then he came back to Jamaica. So we were mending and we were getting close, and he would come over every week and he would help mommy iron my uniform. And he had so many great plans for me and this new journey, because at that point I did well. And when you do well, parents are proud, and then they start to introspect. And I think he was introspecting and he was like, well, I think I've been okay, but I now need to be great. I need to go to the next level. So he was planning to be great. But one of the things that provides me with peace is that I know that when he died proud. You know, mm-hmm. He died truly knowing that I was going to be okay and I was going to take care of myself. Things would happen and I would be where I am now. He died with that contentment. So that provides me with some peace.
So for the issues that you were facing, the self-esteem, the self-worth, you know, as I say, quote unquote, the daddy issues, how mm-hmm. long did that last? Was it throughout your adolescent time, or did it follow you into adulthood?
Okay. So I think the issues manifested themselves in different ways at different stages, right? So for the initial phases of daddy issues, it was things like male validation and male attention that lasted about a year or two after figuring out that that was necessary and I was okay. And I never needed that to thrive or to be great. I quickly grew out of it. I started delving a lot into the online world, trying new things, exploring new avenues of expression. That time Facebook was in, so I was always on there meeting people and stuff like that. And then I also started reading more fiction. So the fiction shifted. So when I was in like primary school, I went to Mineral Heights Primary. So anybody who's listening, big up on yourself. So it shifted from Nancy Drew and Hardy Boys to now romance, right? And for anybody who does any type of romance novels, it's a typical storyline, but it was safe. Boy meets girl, Prince Charming. PG-13, of course, kids. Mm-hmm. And it was a really good escape. So I grew out of that. But then as I got older, those daddy issues now became trust Something issues. More. Because, yeah, are you now going to leave me from like my friends? Are you going to die? You know, all of that trauma that comes with losing a dad. And then over time, I had to recognize that I was getting older and I was looking into marriage, which I didn't know anything about man because I never lived with one. Like I never had a dad around. No, not more man. I don't know what man wear. I don't know how them clothes iron. I don't know nothing. So then now that now became another issue and I had to now learn how to, you know, be a wife and how to live with a guy in the house. And then in my adulthood, that transitioned into having super bad anxiety about when my husband is on the road. So as I said, my dad was violently, you know, mm-hmm. taken out of this earth. So my paranoia tells me every time I can't get my husband after two phone calls that he's something in a ditch somewhere. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is something that I'm currently working through. And that's why I wanted to be open and honest about the fact that it doesn't change. It just manifests in a different way as I got older. But then with age came more wisdom in how to deal with those things that developed. And then I'm at a place where I have a great understanding and a grasp of who I am. So I can identify certain triggers and I know how to navigate them.
Before we discuss how you got to that place, did these issues overall, did it affect your relationship with your mother?
Not really, because me and my mom, we were always very close. She's like one of my best friends at the time. I would say she was my best friend. And after, you know, you meet other people, so she's no longer my only best friend. But me and my mom, we were very close. We are very open. So I don't think that affected us in any way, unless we could say that it brought us closer. But mm-hmm. As an only child, I've always had my mother's full attention, full devotion. I never had to share anything. So that's both good and bad, by the way. But yeah, it didn't affect us. I think she did all she could to help me through that process. She is a great mom, even to this day, even as an adult. She still provides that motherly touch. And
Okay, that's good to know, because, you know, navigating trauma, sometimes it inadvertently affects those around us, especially those we are close with. Sometimes we possibly don't want to let them in on what is happening, but it seems like you had a very open relationship with mom, which was really good. So you mentioned that, you know, with over a period of time, you adapt better, you gained more insight as to what's happening with you, your normal and your abnormal. But how did you get to that place? You also mentioned that after a year's time, certain stuff didn't bother you anymore because you recognize that, you know, it's not really important. So now they hear so no longer. But how did you get to that point?
Yes, that was intriguing to me, the whole 1 year. So was there any little strategy that you devised to, you know, somewhat overcome or, as was said, adapt or adjust to it within just a year's, you know, just a year? How did you do it?
Well, I'll start by saying that life isn't that serious. So that timeline is not a strict 1 year timeline. It's just a 12-month, 365-day timeline, right? So when I say a year, I think it could actually potentially be like a year and a half, because I made a going into third form. So maybe even 2 years. But anyways, the long story short is that there are three factors that allowed me to start healing and growing and moving on. The biggest one being that at about 14, 15, so I admittedly it would be about 2 years after, I started taking my relationship with God much more seriously. You know, you're never too young to truly seek God. And a lot of things might seem as if they're over your head, but at the core of it is understanding that Jesus loves you. He has a plan for your life and he will carry you through. And a lot of weight was on that for me. I always grew up Christian. When my dad was Christian, I was very mature about the entire thing and from a very spiritual place. But having a knowledge of God and having a relationship with God are two different things. So I think I started developing my relationship with him at that point. And when you start developing a relationship with God, learning who he is, learning about his character, reading the Bible and spending time in prayer, a lot of things start to fall away from you.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that used to fuel me and the places that I used to go, it no longer is there. And everything never perfect. So it never started, it never happened all at once. It gradually happened. It was a gradual process. So one, my relationship with God strengthened. Two, I had to take school way more seriously because as you'll maybe hear a little further on, I had a plan for my life and I knew that the only way I could fulfill that plan was if I set up myself very good. One of the things that I was a very forward-thinking teenager. So I knew that I needed to set up a kind of like a resume. I needed to set up my application so that it would be great. So I was going into all the extracurricular activities because it was going to set me up so that I could get scholarships for university. It was going to set me up so that I could be in student leadership. It was going to set me up. It was also going to keep me distracted. More than anything, I really wanted distractions because remember I was telling you that I started going into the online space and I started having other ways of expression. It wasn't very healthy. So when I decided to stop doing those things and getting obsessed with Facebook and being obsessed with social media, then I needed to distract myself in other ways. And extracurricular activity at school, that was very good for me as well. And then the third thing that really contributed to that was that I have very good quality friendships. And I say have because all my friends from high school are still my friends to this day. And our fifth form graduation was 10 years ago and our sixth form graduation was 8 years ago. Well, when we left sixth form was 8 years ago. So it's been a while, you know, I'm not that young anymore. So, but it just goes to show that I had very good friends, very supportive. I could lean on them. They could lean on me. And we went through a lot. Nobody was trying to pull you left or right. We all were on the same path. And we weren't all believing the same things. Like all of us weren't Christians at once or anything like that. But we all loved each other and we treated each other with kindness, respect. And when your grandmother tell her, show me a company, I'm going to tell you who you be, she ain't ever lied, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, she was so truthful. Because when I look at my friend group now, and I look at, like, where we're coming from and all the plans that we would have made for the future, we are literally living our dream life. And yes, we're going to reach it. I'm going to reach where exactly we want to reach. But at the end of the day, all the plans that we made and all the things that we put on that vision board, we are literally just sitting down and watching them come through one by one by one. And that just fills my heart every single time. So, yeah.
The very thought of it is very beautiful, truly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So did they help you navigate through the sadness? Because I know for sure that that's one thing that never really, like, goes away. You mm-hmm. know, you learn how to cope with it, but it doesn't really go away.
Yeah, sadness doesn't disappear. But I think more than anything, they helped to keep me distracted. So we were always focused on school, doing better, being better. My friends were never in any, maybe other people thought that we were in competition. So people would try to pitch us against each other, but we were just always rooting for each other, you know? So, mm-hmm. and in the same way, all my friends came from very strict homes, so they couldn't go anywhere anyway. So all of us kind of had that mutual understanding. We were like, well, we're not going away. So it makes sense. We just hang out together. And we had that mutual sense of purpose. So the conversations were similar. We grew in similar stages. So whenever we started dating at a similar stage. Mm-hmm. We always knew whenever anybody was exposed to something or some other, like, advancements in any type of thinking, mindset, we'd share with each other. We would always bring each other along. So I don't think I admittedly opened about sadness, because the sadness dissipated, like, it just disappeared, right? It just kind of went into the background. I never recognized how sad I was because I was way too busy. And it's not like I didn't suppress those feelings, because whenever they came up, I dealt with them. And I would always cry. Like, when daddy's birthday, I would cry. When his father's day, I would cry. There's nothing out of the norm to cry. But having those friends there to fuel me in the happy moments and to give me something to laugh about and to always have somebody to text and key and to do homework with and to study with and to kind of keep on that journey, that was a very fulfilling moment, and it was great to have them to fill that gap.
This is a prime example of how support helps you through trying situations. That's mm-hmm. why whenever persons are in a depressive state, they encourage them to have people around you that, you know, support you, that can help to get you out of that zone. Not necessarily said, I'm gonna care, go to do and care, go on party, but being there for you, being fruitful in their appearance, just the way that they sustain your life, it helps a whole lot. And we can see how birds of a feather really do flock together here. And I can really appreciate how fruitful your relationship was and how it sustained you during that time. And it also explained why you only dealt with stuff for so long and no more. You right. went through the motion. Yeah. You went through the motion. You accepted the emotions. You accepted the feelings. You dealt with it there and then. And even though, you know, everyone knew that this is what happened, they also knew that you had to go through it, but they will be there for you through it all. So I can definitely understand why you had such a, some may say, a quick coping period. But as you mentioned, over time, things just evolve into something more. So thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome.
I'd like for you to also share with us transitioning into law school. You mentioned that you faced some financial struggles while navigating this journey.
I think I think it started actually when I was in sixth form and I recognized that I wanted to do law. And one of the things, when you think about tackling any kind of high ticket career, is that you have to think about how it's going to get funded. Now, I remember that my dad died and my mom recently did a surgery during that time. So any little savings she did have, gone.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I started now considering and thinking about different ways to maneuver the situation. And during that time, I felt like all the time, all the ideas that came up to mind were just not good enough. And I just felt like it wasn't going to work. But that faith in God that I had when I was 15, it developed and it grew. I know it was way more mature than I was then. So I truly leaned on him and leaned on his promise. And one of the things that he promised to me was that he would never leave me nor forsake me. He promised that he would always be my friend. And because I was forward thinking, I remember I was keeping myself busy and I kind of set up myself so that I had a good application.
Mm-hmm.
So I started praying and I was like, I'm going to apply for all these scholarships. I'm going to apply for student loans. I'm going to apply for everything because I have to go. And a lot of people are like, oh, them not apply for a student loan and them not go to this and them not go apply for that scholarship because where $50,000 go. I remember one scholarship in particular I applied for. It was a $50,000 scholarship. And to give you guys an idea of the disparity for those who are listening, per year for law school, it is 1.5 million Jamaican dollars. As a matter of fact,
God.
It is 10,000 USD. So wherever the US is at that time,
mm-hmm.
that's what it will reflect, right?
That not
and
cheap.
They quote it in US. That not cheap. So I remember when I was applying to the $50,000 scholarship, and I remember one of my classmates said, oh, can I apply to that? Me, I apply to that. So what am I going with that little bit of money then? Lo and behold, that $50,000 scholarship ended up into a $300,000 scholarship.
Whoa.
Because the foundation just got some more money. You know? So, I mean, you never really know
what's gonna
until
happen.
You try, mm-hmm. right? So I tried very hard. And I think during law school, I got about 4 or 5 different scholarships. And even with all those scholarships, I didn't make the 1.2 because you have to remember that what a lot of scholarships that I got could have paid other people tuition 2-3 times. So no one organization is going to give you 1.2. So I had to get mm-hmm. a piece here, a piece there, some from family, some, even though I took some from student loans as well, even with all of that. And through it all, I was three things. I was very resilient, I was very disciplined, and I was very focused. I was focused. Nobody could get me to do anything that I didn't want to do. And this is during high school. This is not even, we don't reach university yet. But I think if you condition your mind for something and you decide that you have to get it. I remember writing my CXC paper and my K paper and I clearly remember saying to myself, you are the person who is between yourself and these scholarships. You're mm-hmm. the only one. Nobody's out for you. And I think having that strong mentality where I'm a victor, I'm not a victim. And I'm going to sit in the winning seat all the time. I'm never going to look at myself as a victim. No, I know how to phrase that. I never knew what that means then, right? So it's not like I knew all these great things when I was 17. But what I did know that I knew that I had the power of my future in my hands, mm-hmm. which meant that I had to study harder. I had to double up. I had to not sleep if I never have to sleep. If I didn't understand something, I would find other students who would understand it, tell them to explain it to me. I try to get tutoring, save my lunch money, don't eat no food, carry lunch from home.
What
you say? You think I'm joking?
Don't eat no food. Man.
Right. I wouldn't eat. So I would eat food from home. So, mm-hmm. you know how sometimes as high school students, they don't want to carry them lunch kit. They don't want to carry any rice and peas and chicken from home. They more want to buy box food and party like all the other kids. Of course, that's something that you want to do. But at that point, I was a little bit older, so I was 16, 17, and I knew what I wanted. So if it meant sacrificing the box food and bringing a sandwich or bringing something from home,
then that's what
I was
going
willing
to do
that. Right. And I never grew up poor. My mom is a teacher, so she never rich either, but it's not like I was struggling for food. Mm-hmm. But if I needed to pay money for my tutor to tutor me Spanish that I could just not get, I had to put aside money and save. So yeah, those are just some things that I did. And I think that really helped me to get into law school and even to sustain it.
You mentioned something that really stood out to me, leaning on God.
Mm-hmm.
For an adult, you know, no brainer. God is a forefront and center for life. You know, say if we are got you, faith and faith alone. But as an adolescent, that's not something that many of us do, especially when, you know, say just got church for got church sake. But mm-hmm. You were sustained in church. You were a Christian at that point in time, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For our listeners who aren't Christian and who only go to church because mommy says so or daddy says so, would you like to share with them why that was so important to you at that point in time and how exactly that made sense in your head? Because for many of our adolescents, what God will do? Yeah, me pray and sometimes him not answer. So why me go pray now and in good not answer again?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, help that's to a fair question. Enlighten them on the importance of leaning on God.
Well, I mean, I was there as well, but during all those years, and I was telling you about having faith in God and stuff, it wasn't constant, right? So I had a lot of moments where I didn't really believe. I had moments when I was stronger. I had moments when I was weaker. And for a lot of my teenage years, I went to church because my mom said so as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I don't think I had a very big pivotal point with my, so when I was a teen, like between like about 13 and about 17, I had a foundational understanding of who he was. I was going to church because my mom said so. In the latter years, when I maybe about 15, 16, I started getting more active. And I think what nailed it down for me was that I started hanging around more Christian people.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw others my age sharing testimonies. So I joined ISCF at Glenmere at the time. And then within my church, I'm Adventist. So like within my church group, I would go to church camps and I'd go to youth rallies and youth retreats and stuff like that, all the youth events. And it was really good interacting with people my age, because what it did was that it took me out of the, oh, this is just for old people, and into God mm-hmm. listens to me too. And it's very important for younger people to have a relationship with God instead of just having a knowledge of him. Because the earlier you do it, the earlier you will have the peace that passeth all understanding, right?
That's true.
It's the faith that's going to help you through all the midterm exams, all the end of term, all the CXC, all the CAPE. Those are the moments of faith, and the extra push is what will keep you going. So I do recommend you trying to. And how do you build a relationship with him? It doesn't have to be fancy. Sometimes I know it might feel it's intimidating because you're hearing the tongues and you're seeing the people drop down and the spirit and you're not working.
Everybody
a ball. And you're wondering, how does this work? But start small. The Bible is a love letter. You find a version that works for you. You can go on your phone, you can download the Bible app. The YouVersion Bible app is one that I really love. And they have Bible reading plans on it for teens as well. So you can go into something that's much more relatable, something that will speak to you. And you'll be so surprised to see how God can speak to you and help you to develop a personal relationship with him. One that is separate and apart from the relationship he has with your parents.
Mm-hmm. True. So true. Because I do think that, and you have shared on this narrative as well, we mm-hmm. aren't always doing a lot for our children and adolescents in church, especially where we have the small community churches, you know, the same set of people in another church. If the young people did not come, or young people did not come, even when time we invite them, and what we are going to do.
Yeah.
So it stops there. It stops at what we are going to do. We can't do nothing more. So they aren't having that pull that they may need to see the revelation of God in others so they can believe it for themselves. So I really do that think that that is a lack where that is concerned. But as you have mentioned, even when you lost your dad, your mm-hmm. faith in God, your relationship with him that grew, it helped you to navigate that adversity. And I do want to thank you for sharing all of those, everything that you had shared just now. Just before I move on, Takis, is there anything that you'd like to ask for, I guess?
No, no specific questions. I am, however, intrigued about how, you know, she overcame or is in the process of overcoming the adversity. I am particularly inspired by how she phrased it all, saying that, you know, it's not something that stops. It's, you know, continuous and that you have to be consistent. So I'm just
thinking yeah, I love it.
Yes.
All right, great. Zara, mm-hmm. what does adversity mean to you?
Adversity means struggle, rough patches, circumstances beyond our control.
Nice.
Aww.
And what encouraging words would you have for an adolescent right now that may have either lost someone dear to them or looking outward on the financial struggles that they are facing right now?
Well, first I would say, so backtrack a little bit. I would put you on a task or ask you to do an exercise. And this exercise is to get a piece of paper or a vision board or whatever you need to get to write down where you see yourself in 10 years, where you see yourself in 5 years, what kind of dream life, and truly believe that you can get it. And the reason I want you to frame that is because every decision you make now will impact your future. Life is hard. Things, adversity, issues are going to come left, right, and center. That's just the world that we live in. The sooner we accept that that's the way we live in and try to navigate it the best way we can, the easier it will get to move through it, right? So write down your dream life. Think about the little steps that you can take now to get to that dream life. Continue grinding every single day. It is the 1% of effort that you do every day that's going to add up ultimately in the future. So that's for like the overall growth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then if you're going through loss, if you're going through pain, suffering, grief, one, that I didn't mention this, but sometimes there is so much and no more we can do by ourselves. So seek some sort of professional counseling. I know your nurse has some skills. I know she might have recommendations as well, but sometimes you need somebody to talk to. You can't bottle those things in. You might not have friends who understand or know the clinical practices
mm-hmm.
that they need to tell you and to encourage you, but you have to seek some sort of professional help, especially if it is weighing on you. I did a little therapy with my dad died as well, so that taught me some of the different coping mechanisms. I did not include that, but I'm telling you now. But don't sit and allow the grief to take over your entire life, because I know this might sound harsh, but them dead already.
Yeah,
that's literally the reality. And life goes on and your life goes on. So you can't be living and dead at the same time. It's mm-hmm. not an easy journey. It's not an easy process. And I know it because I've been through it. But what are you going to do to carry on their legacy? That should be your driving force and your mission. How am I going to bring on mommy's legacy? How am I going to bring on daddy's legacy? How am I going to bring on uncle's legacy or whoever you've lost? How can I make them never forget? Like nobody in my family will ever forget my dad, because Geddy's daughter turned out good. And mm-hmm. that will forever be a reminder that his daughter turned out well. You get me? His name will never stop ringing in spaces where he has never been. And it has always been my thing to do the best that I can to push it on. Would he want me being around sad all day? He wouldn't. He would want me to find joy in the little moments. He would want me to romanticize life. And that's what the person who you've lost would have wanted for you as well. So pick up yourself, decide to be the victor and not the victim. And really consider your future and where you want to be. Who do you want to be like in the next 5 years?
Thank you so much for such powerful words.
You're welcome.
And thank you so much for sharing such an amazing story with us. You shared how you triumphed grief, not because mm-hmm. you were strong within yourself, but because you leaned on God. And yeah. your very circle, it lifted you up. Mm-hmm. You ensured to surround yourself with people who were going forward and who were always going to bring you with them, no matter what. And you shared with our audience the real meaning of taking school seriously, because if you have a future, you have to take a hold of it. You can't just mm-hmm. sit and expect it to come and land in your lap. You may have a vision, but how are you going to get there? What are the steps that you're going to take to get there? Are you ensuring that you are in the position to grab that opportunity when you are put in that space at a point in time? You've reminded us that the importance of God in our life cannot be underemphasized or overemphasized, I should say. God is our start and our end. And it may not always be smooth flowing, but he will never leave us as long as we hold on to him. And we just want to tell you, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. Thank you for being an inspiration just the same and for laying yourself vulnerable on this platform. It's truly appreciated.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was such a pleasure.
Zara, where can my audience find you?
You can find me at zara.marie on Instagram. You can find me and my husband at Adventures of XYZ on YouTube.
Great. And for anyone that is not an adolescent, but, you know, a wife, she has a podcast just the same called Beyond the Bouquet. I think you'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, check that out.
So thank you all for tuning into yet another episode of Mecca Coffee and Reason. And if you like what you have heard thus far, please remember to like, share, and subscribe to our podcast channels on all platforms. Leave a comment under each episode to let us know how this podcast episode have impacted you. And feel free to send us a message on our Instagram page at Mecca Coffee and Reason or via email at schoolnursedouglas@gmail.com. with the names and contacts of those who you would like to see next reasoning with us. Or if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss in the Mecca Reason series, let us know just the same. So as we say hello to our brand new week, let's remember our podcast mantra. We are all brewing resilience and sipping strength, one cup at a time. As the week goes on, allow the aroma of freshly brewed coffee to inspire authentic conversations. And may each episode leave you with a sense of connection, reflection, and a renewed appreciation for the simple joy of sharing thoughts over a cup of coffee. See you next Sunday on the Mecca Coffee and Reason podcast.